Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard. And I say this a lot, but I am super excited because on Zoom with me right now is Celine Chica. Hi, Celine.
Hi, Jeff.
And you're in Cape Town, yes?
Yes, I'm in Cape Town.
I'm actually proud to tell, I did not give this away when we were talking before we started recording, but I spent a week in Cape Town and because my ex-wife was a travel agent and we got a thorough tour and I was pretty amazed by that city. It's a pretty amazing place.
Cool. When were you here?
Oh my gosh. 2011, I think.
Oh, okay.
So like 11 years ago. It was right before the World Cup was coming, or there was going to be a World Cup match. And they showed it. We toured the township that was going to be destroyed to build a stadium or something.
Oh, that must have been 2010.
2010, that makes more sense.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was a strange time in our country. But
oh, my gosh, yeah. But that's why, well, I'll just say I was very impressed with your country. Good and bad, right? There was good and bad everywhere. But I found Cape Town to be... I mean, whatever. It's I compared to Joburg, I was like, oh, Cape Town's nice.
Yes, I am someone who ran away from Joburg and is currently in Cape Town, so I understand.
Yeah, and honestly, a lot of it is like California. It feels, by the way, for those who don't know, South Africa feels like California most of the time.
Yeah, Cape Town feels like California, and I think Joburg is the New York.
Yeah,
it's very. They're just different energies. It's much more of a hustle space, and Cape Town is a lot more chilled and laid back.
All right, so we've talked about Cape Town, which is nice, but I'm not focusing on Celine's work, which is her film, The Wapademic. Oh my goodness. I should just be cursing to describe The Wapademic, because I think cursing is allowed. We are allowed to curse all we want on this, but on this podcast. But in 2021, Celine submitted The Wapademic. It's a short comedy to the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. And it is the best satire imaginable. Like, I wanted to praise you because, first of all, obviously as a film festival programmer, you're praying for comedy because you get so much drama and serious documentaries. You know, important films are wonderful. But comedy is wonderful too. And so few people do satire well. Like... People do sarcasm, they do shock value, but true satire, I think, is, I would call it like the highest level of comedy. I'm a comedy snob, I guess. I love when it's comedic satire and it's actually really saying something. So The Wapademic is hilarious and so incisively perceptive of what goes on in our world with gender and sexism and the media and pop culture. I just think it's so I'm giving Celine a golf clap here while we're on Zoom.
Thank you.
And I'm so excited, right? The Wapademic, by the way, if I sound extra excited, I didn't mention in the introduction that we never managed to do a Zoom Q&A last year when you were in the festival. And then you agreed to let The Wapademic be in the Discovery Indie Film TV series. So thank you so much. I love having it in there. And it'll be in season 7. And I believe episode 1, because I always like to start with comedy, because what can I say? If the first episode of a 10-episode season of the TV series is funny and fun, I think people tend to watch the rest of the episodes. If you start with like the grim stuff, people are like, well, that was well made, but... I don't feel so good. So I believe if you go to Amazon Prime Video and type in Discover Indie Film, it'll autocomplete for you. Hopefully you're watching on a nice big TV because the film looks great too. But if you go to season 7, episode 1, you will see The Wapademic with I believe it's opened for with a music video that is starring squirrels, actual squirrels.
Okay.
In a music video called The World's Gone Nuts, and then it's followed by a really dark comedy called Good Counsel. So, by the way, this is in my head because I figured this out last week. I figured out the season. So, Celine's the first filmmaker to know where her film is landing in season 7.
Amazing. So honored.
So,
thank you.
This is our first chance to talk, and what can I say? I'm going to come across as very goofy to you because I've been enjoying your film now for like over a year. So I feel like I know you because I know you're funny. I know you're smart. I've your performance in the film as one of the men judging Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B is and talking about how to make the world a little better for men is just so insightful and funny. So I feel like I've hung out and talked to you because I've seen you on this film and I know this film. Whereas to you, I'm just like some strange person in California who you've never met. So I guess that's my disclaimer for my tone.
All good. Thank you.
And
I'm really glad that you feel that way.
Isn't it funny? Don't we do that? Like when we see people on TV yes. or on screen, we just start to, you know, you just start to like them. And you're like, if I meet that person, I'd be like, hey, you and I should be. It's just silly. It's so silly, but we can't help it.
Yeah.
And now Zoom has really turned us into like friends with people on screen.
Yeah.
But I think I've been talking too much, and now I'm going to turn it over to Celine and just plainly ask you. So now I've flattered you with how talented I think you are. And the question is, where did you begin? Were you initially a performer? Were you a performative kid? Were you a writer kid? Were you always interested in things when did you turn? Did you start with comedy and then go into film, or get into film and find you had a skill for comedy? I have no idea. So,
but yeah, that's a really good question. I actually haven't thought about the comedy link. So I started. I got a degree for the parents first, but I knew I wanted to be an actor. So I did an acting for film course, and then in that we did a filmmaking course. And then I got to make a really silly short film. And from there, I thought, this was really enjoyable. I actually want to do this. So then after I graduated, I did a web series that was a comedy web series. So I think I would say then comedy, just because the web series was meant to be like a YouTube vlog. I would do an annual comedy vlog. And then I just turned them into a web series. And so... yeah, I'd say I started out as comedy and writing kind of were very much together. They overlapped.
And you went to university for something responsible, but you always knew that you wanted to perform, to act.
Yes.
Like in high school and stuff, did you get to do some plays and things, or?
I did. Yeah, that's where I got into it. It was very late in high school, I'd say. I took drama because I'd been in a play. There was like a major production every year. And then the drama teacher, the one who directed that was the drama teacher. And so she said, hey, you should take drama as a subject. And it ended up being my favorite course. I just really, really enjoyed performing. And it was very new for me because I think I grew up very shy. And so the idea of performing just felt like, I'm a completely different person. Like that's a totally different personality to who I am every day. That's where it all started. Writing, I've always done. I think writing came from like the idea of me being a writer is probably the most recent thing because it took me a while for me to accept that. But I've always written in some form. So it's only now that it's like being channeled to screen.
Interesting, right? So the writing almost came last, but the perform, so first with some acting in high school and then the responsibility, yes. But then a class at university that totally inspired you, it sounded like.
Yeah, definitely. And the directing was kind of accidental as well. That makes sense. It was, it almost felt like out of necessity, just, okay, well, I don't have the funds to find a director, so let me just direct it. And that's, the project I did before the WAPademic was that exactly. I was new in Cape Town. I didn't know a lot of people. I could afford to hire like two people, and that's how I ended up doing it. That's me, I guess.
And so cool. I love hearing, because you know, the era we're in is the era of the smartphone and YouTube, and when it all first hit. You know, everyone with the enthusiasm for indie film was like, okay, is there going to be is there going to be good stuff from this? And it took a long time, I think, because at first, I think most of the self-produced stuff was pretty low quality. And now, my goodness, like there's people like yourself who, you know, thanks to YouTube and digital photography, like you were able to experiment and start doing a web series and stuff. Back in the day, right? 10 years earlier, it would have been just like writing sketch after sketch or something.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. That's a really good point. The web series was just entirely from YouTube and having social media as well. Because without, I don't know how anyone would have seen it before then.
And did you find your this is a leading question, but did you find your skills, like, were you happily, like, as each thing that you made, were you learning new things and sort of it becoming like, in a way, a film school?
Yes, definitely. It's definitely at that point. I'm sure most, almost every filmmaker feels this way, where I cannot, like, watch anything that I've made. I haven't watched more than 20 seconds of my web series in years now. I can't do it to myself. But I think it's comforting to know that a lot of filmmakers feel this way, that it's just, you know, you get through it and that's how you learn and that's how you know you've grown. Definitely learning a lot more, even with directing, I feel like I'm getting a lot more refined with that. And there's always a learning experience and you try not to make the same mistakes, but then you make new mistakes with the new project. And that's how it kind of goes. But
although those are mistakes to you, I bet they're, are you your own worst critic in a way?
Definitely. 100%. Like just the worst. I need to work on that, but a lot of it,
you know, I mean, I haven't seen the earlier stuff, but the Wapademic is so well directed, and you know, it actually for a short, a fairly short short, it's got multiple locations, the camera work, you know, of course, one of the tests of great directing is do we notice it or not? And like right off the bat, with the mockumentary, vibe, we just start enjoying the work because there's nothing standing in the way, you know, and that's excellent directing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I feel like I'm still trying to figure out what good directing is. I know that sounds strange, but I think, I still feel like, am I really a director or do I just direct because, you know, it had to be done. That's fine. That I'll figure out over the next few years, I think.
We'll see what happens if you decide, okay, I'm going to work with another director, and then you'll look at what they're doing and go, no. Cause I think you have really good instincts, but so were there other shorts in between like the web series and the Wapademic or?
Just one. It was probably my first set, like purely satirical comedy thing where it's called Stank Like a Man, and it was an ad for a fictional men's body wash. It was the same lead actor. That was the second thing we actually worked with together. And it was just making fun of how needlessly masculine affirming body washes can be. And that was a lot of fun. That was definitely where all of the mistakes, I'd say the new round of mistakes, you know, were made then. But it was really, it was very valuable. And that was the first, with the web series, every time I co-directed a few episodes, but it was always, like I said, out of necessity or out of just, okay, let me pick up the slack or something. But this was the first one that I was like, I am directing this. So it was my first like full-time director's hat. I'm doing this thing. I'm kind of grateful for that because I think there was a good lead into the Wapademic. Because Wapademic was almost a more mature version of that same idea.
And you'd always, it sounds like you'd always had a comedic sensibility.
Yeah, I think so.
Because, There's people who just watch commercials and they wash over them, and there's people who see commercials and recognize how silly they are and want to make fun of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, the
yeah, that's a good point.
I joke, we had a music the winner for Grand Prize of music video at the last Sherman Oaks Film Festival, that was, it's fresh in my mind because it was like 3 weeks ago. He made this music video because he was in yoga classes and seeing people act like complete goofballs about being like gurus in yoga and everything. And, and then they were like, and so he started like making up names for himself. And I said, yeah, because satire is intelligence, an intelligent person's reaction to foolishness.
Yeah. Thank you. I guess so. I think that I am starting to, just with more ideas that I have and stuff, I think satire is probably my favorite form. It's something I definitely want to stick with and improve on. And I'm starting now to find the right people who are aligned with that. And it's been really lovely.
And did you, and you always did the acting, was there sketch comedy stuff too and other things that you've done, or have you focused on using cameras?
Wait, sorry, what do you mean?
Oh, I mean, well, so it's super common over in the USA to a lot of people do like sketch comedy troupes and they perform sort of live improv. Right. And I admit that when I watch Wapademic, I think, wow, so are these like, you know, it struck me as really great sketch comedy too. And I wondered if you had a background in that or not.
No, my first thing with satire or comedy in general was probably it was when I was in LA, cause I was there for 2 years and I did a political news show. And, that was my first introduction to it. And that maybe got me closer towards like a more stand-up kind of vibe. But from there, I did do improv, but that was part of the film school thing. And then when I came here, I did a few improv classes as well. But I've never been part of a sketch group, I'd say. I would love to be, but no, sadly not yet.
Well, and it's so hard to get the people together and actually get along.
Yeah, that's also a part of it. I was really impressed with the people that, you know, the cast and all who came through and just were naturally just great at it. And both of them, actually, the guys who were not the other lead, they didn't have big comedy backgrounds. So the one guy who was playing very serious, I said, no, I cast you because you have this very serious air about you. And I want that to come out. I want that to be part of the humor. And it was so lovely to see how he was even surprised with himself that, oh, I can be funny. And am I funny? You know, almost like he kind of thought I'm a serious man and I do serious roles. And that's what ended up making him just perfect for it. So that was really lovely to see.
Yeah, that must have been really fun and you were, in a way, you're demonstrating how, especially with satire, but with comedy, if people are going for laughs, it often fails, right? It's, you have to be true to the material and let it speak for itself, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
As a writer, like, did you write the Wapademic and then decide to make it, or did you get the idea for the film and like start visualizing?
A few months actually went by between I have the idea and I wrote like a first idea for it, and then, oh, I'm making this. And the idea was from actually these kinds of reactions on the internet when WAP came out. And I caught onto it a bit late, like maybe 2 weeks or so. I was like, what's hashtag WAP? I'm seeing this trending on Twitter, but you know, I hadn't really clicked on it for a while. And then I was a fan of both Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B. So when I found out they'd done a song together, I was like, what? Oh my gosh, I have to check this out. And I was just, I loved men's reactions to it because it was so, it was so predictable and also quite hilarious that they worried about their daughters. Like one man had like a 5-6 minute video essay about his daughter and how he's so worried for her. And then I thought, and I wrote the initial meeting scene. I think that's what I started with. It was like going to be the meeting. And then it just wasn't really landing well. I didn't really have like the, I didn't have a mockumentary aspect to it. I think that's what it was. And then I kind of dusted off an old mockumentary script that I'd started and didn't really follow through with. And I thought, oh, this is it. This is how I tell the story. So that's when it kind of was rewritten from the frame of like, okay, let me document this and make this like a lot more quote unquote serious, as opposed to just a sketch of a guy's having a meeting.
Yeah, exactly. Because you were reacting to the hypocrisy you were seeing in people's reactions to WAP. Yes. And Lord knows, I can't think of a song that was so culturally dominant across the world.
Yeah.
As well, like WAP hit and it was everywhere. Like, you know, people like me who have no connection to pop, I've hit middle age and I just don't know what's hip anymore. And I knew the song. That's also a great song, but you know, the fact that it filtered to me, like, you know, we have a 15-year-old and she like plays music and I'm like, what's that? She's like, it's been like number one for 3 weeks and you don't know anything.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's me. But I heard, but WAP hit me. So
yeah.
It's a huge cultural moment.
And I think even the nice part was that they, the artists as well, were calling that out. I know Megan Thee Stallion had a tweet that said, you know, boys are crying about WAP while singing the lyrics to, or rapping the lyrics to Slob on My Knob word for word or something like that. You know, all the, And I started looking back and I have to also credit social media and TikTok for calling out this or adding the, you know, the reaction to the hypocrisy. There was one TikTok that was literally just a guy cutting out, trimming words from like 18, I think, different rap songs and just showing the hypocrisy that because it was a guy saying it, like, oh, this is so normal. That was definitely part of it. It kind of set the wheels turning, I think, in my head. And
because it was a cultural moment, and just so much hypocrisy, So it's so nice. So then you wrote it, and like on the page, you hadn't. I guess I'm once again just seeking an answer, but you did. You just knew it would carry over. It sounds like you knew it was going to be great on screen because you'd been doing all the work you'd been doing.
I think so. Yeah. Yes, I was worried actually about the timing because when I shot it, it had been out for about 5-6 months, and I thought it's too late. I always take so long to react to things. Maybe no one cares about this anymore. But then I think only knowing that this message is actually it has a long shelf life. This, you know, this kind of hypocrisy is something that we're criticizing and we will be criticizing for a few more decades, I'm sure. I think I knew that it would be relevant. And it just had to hit right. I think it was the rest of it was just up to the performance and the editing as well. But I really trusted my DP. He actually has a lot of experience in documentaries. So I was like, oh, this is perfect. Bring all your skills, bring all of that, make it look as close to a real documentary as possible. And all of that just helped.
I assume it was in the writing process that you came up with, because I love how you cut away to moments where men are around a woman who's singing the song.
Yes.
And they're reacting in real time. Was that was on the page?
Yes, it was. Yeah. They all had their back, except for the guy that I was playing. They all had their backstories, you know, of, oh, this tragic, the sad day. And, you know, looking at documentaries and how they do have almost a reenactment of a thing that happened. It was meant to be that. And yes, it was on the page. It was quite great. I especially working with the one, the elevator crush, one who, cause she's a friend of mine. We went to the same film school and, she has like such an innocent look to her. And I was like, you perfect for this, because you just have this like big doe-eyed little girl kind of vibe. And it is the, you know, this was breaking the idea of what an innocent or good woman is. And yeah, so I think that was a lot of the fun part. It was part of the page. And even in the lyrics, the songs were chosen very specifically. Like, okay, I told the cast, like, go read this. I mean, go listen to the song so you know the melody of it, and you rap it when you're, you know, it's kind of pointing out that they're listening to a hip hop track. And then, oh my gosh, the audacity that she's also listening to a hip hop track that's about sex. What do you mean? So, yeah.
Yeah, that's obviously, I mean, that's something I love so much about it, is especially, yeah, when you mentioned the elevator crush, that's actually one of the first ones. Although I also picture the one at home, but yeah, because there's also, I love that you're putting in that context of the situation where, and a lot of us are guilty of this, like men, when a woman comes into their orbit, when she comes into the elevator, there's a wish for her to pleased to meet certain male expectations, I think, in society. Yeah, yeah. And a lot of women feel that pressure. I hear women talk about it actually a lot, where, yeah, you know, we had some really good Q&A's at the last film festival, because we had so many female directed films, and female directors were sharing, you know, what it's like to be a woman in society and like feel like you've got to let men down easy if they ask for your number and stuff. And, you know, because of safety issues and things. And the idea that in your film, a guy has a pretty girl get on the elevator and he's all ready to hit on her and thinks she's there for him. And she's just listening to her headphones and starts saying wonderful lyrics. And it's just like, and then he's got to go to his group and talk about, we've got to stop this.
Yeah.
It's a big problem. We know what his actual problem with it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so perceptive. And it's so, I guess, that's one of the truths about satire, right? Is it has to be true. Like you can't do satire about, you know, something overly sarcastic or unrealistic, because it won't ring.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I think that's what was so incredible, but also mind blowing, is looking through lyrics and realizing that I'm not exaggerating. I thought about an artist, like when I was brainstorming which songs to put down, you know, like, okay, what is he going to be singing? He's going to be singing Post Malone. He's going to be singing this. He's going to be singing that. I would just click on a random one and the lyrics in it were just like, wow, for real. This is a real thing that has been on the radio for years, for decades, and just super normal. Yeah, it just made for, it was just fresh commentary, you know, right there. Like, it's undeniable that this is how men have been talking about women in songs. Unfortunately, it's the truth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Listening to that kind of lyric, and it just being, it makes me think of the fish water joke, where two fish are hanging out and another fish comes up and says, how the water today feels great. And then one of the other fishes says, what's water? Like it's just, it's in the air. Water. Yeah. Like this, the degree of sexism in pop culture.
Exactly.
We don't even notice it in a way, like, because you know, the word bitch got focused on for a little while and it just shifted to a bunch of others. I mean,
yeah,
I will. You know, it's the fathers of daughters thing always gets me, because you can be a sexist pig and love your daughter.
Yeah.
And it is not at all a pass to start saying, well, I want men to treat my daughter with respect.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean they're treating women with respect. And it doesn't mean that they're openly rejecting the dehumanization of women in culture. I mean,
yeah, they kind of just wanted to specifically stop in this one area that involves their child. And it's pretty
that stupid old adage of the father sitting on the porch with a shotgun when a boy picks up his daughter. It's like, you're not actually doing anybody any favors here.
Yeah.
It's what we deal with. Well, and was it, it sounded like it was a fun shoot.
So much fun. Honestly, it was incredible. I think, Yeah, it was really, really great. And also a lot of it was a pleasant surprise of these two new people I hadn't worked with, just being perfect and so professional and so prepared and all of that, and willing to kind of play around. I think from my web series days, I got into the habit of, there was one guy in the web series who was really good at improv, who just on the first ever shoot of this web series came through, and he just had alternative lines or deliveries for every single thing. And from then I've just kind of kept that, stuck with that, just like, yeah, what do you have? What else can you do? Try this a different way. And I think that that's, the idea of play or improv in general always makes me nervous, because I think I'm like an over planner, but I think once I have the shots or the takes that I want, I'm like, okay, what else can we do? Try this a new way. And it just ends up being so much more fun. And when everyone's having a good time, they just put so much more into the performance. So yeah, a lot of fun. And like part of the shoot was just one of the best experiences of the whole of last year.
Wonderful. And I'll add, when you call yourself an over planner, I think that also makes you an excellent film producer, because you cannot over plan a film, especially one where, you know, you're obviously, I assume, kind of making it out of your own pocket and it's all on you. Like, you cannot. And the Wapademic shows it's so, so well done and looks so good. You couldn't have done that, like, you know, in a laissez-faire way, we're like, yeah, let's just show up and shoot it with a cell phone and see if we get something funny. It's like, no, you have to plan it out to have it come out right.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Unfortunately, I really enjoy film producing. Like, I think just the whole planning aspect is actually quite fun. It is very satisfying. But yeah, it did have to. I know I keep throwing, I'm not necessarily throwing all of the praise away, but I'm just like adequately transferring it to the cast as well, who really just showed up. And and even in the table reads, I think just from, one thing I always try and do with the actors is in the table read is like, if a line comes out wrong or it just sounds weird, tell me. Like, I'd rather right now rewrite it, you know, phrase it in a way that isn't so clunky or something, just because, yeah. So I think in that way, my slight underconfidence in my abilities does allow for, you know, everyone to feel a lot more comfortable and like a willingness to adapt and, you know, make things a little easier for cast. So just really great experience.
Excellent. Well, and I'll add that your humility is welcomed. It's okay. You can be humble, and I'll take care of the praise side. And because honestly, I often think to myself, well, I mean, if I, you know, when, and by the way, when I praise a film like yours, I mean, I'll just share that the year, you know, you submitted to Sherman Oaks Film Festival 2021, which was our first in-person festival after a year and a half of COVID, where we were all trapped inside. So we got a huge number of submissions. I think almost well over 800 films. So when I talk about how great the Wapademic is, I don't say that about every film I see. There was hundreds and hundreds of films that I didn't think were any good at all. So
yeah,
I might be a little biased in favor of you, just because I know how hard it is to actually have something come out well, because it's beyond people's control in a lot of ways, although planning it out is one way.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And was it a long shoot, or did you just get it over within a weekend, or?
It was 2 days. Two days. 1 day for all the flashback scenes, and then the meeting was just the second shoot day. So all the other locations, I was very sneaky and lucky in the apartment that I live in. So one was in my room next door. The other was all the talking heads were in the lounge. There are these gray blinds that just ended up being a perfect like backdrop. The other one was in the parking lot where I parked my car. And so all of those were done on the first day, which was the longer day. The meeting was just the second location, got that done in the day, and it was It was a long 2 days, definitely. But
it was a lot. Did you have time to focus on your own performance at all?
It was hard. definitely. I thankfully knew the lines, I think, because from writing and rewriting and looking at it all the time, it wasn't necessarily hard to remember the lines. But and I also didn't have many. There was definitely a switch between, okay, need a switch from direct to thing, and then, okay, are we doing my takes now? Great, let me just take a minute, take a beat. But I guess from being the director and the writer, you kind of know what you want from each character, and having known what I wanted out of it did help. And also having a DP who was also on the same page and allows all the rewatches and stuff. Yeah.
And I mean, as I think before we started recording, I told you how much I enjoy your performance in it and get a kick out of it, because yeah, men have dressed, you know, in a binary world, and we're sort of getting beyond binary points of view, but we're still, you know, comedy has often always been very binary between male and female, and men have always done female characters. So I do feel like your decision to play one of the men in that meeting is also social commentary.
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you for picking up on that. It was, it definitely was, not just fun for me to step into this role that is quite a ridiculous character, but it is so common. There are so many, even right now on social media and stuff, there are a lot of male comedians who build their entire careers on impersonating women, in a way that can be social, like fun, lighthearted social commentary, but sometimes, really does quite often push into just pure misogyny. And and this was definitely a commentary on that. Thank you for picking up on that and for seeing that.
For sure. And it adds an extra layer to the comedy, I believe. And it does make it funnier on multiple viewings to know that you are the writer director, I think, because first viewing, especially like watching things for the film festival, I always make the first viewing completely pure. Like I don't read about the film. I don't read the cover letter or anything that's in there on Film Freeway. I just, let's watch the film and see exactly what the filmmaker is presenting to us as an audience. You know, I want that first frame of the film to be my first information, right? Like I don't even look, I try to not look at the title even, because some filmmakers save the title for the end, some put it in the beginning, and I kind of want to experience it that way. So the first time it's like super funny. And then when you read about it and then you watch it again, and you're like, that's the writer, director, producer right there, like really having fun with it. I think it just makes it so fun. So I'm so glad you did it.
Thank you.
And when you were writing it, did you like, even on the page, like you were saying, okay, I'm writing this one for me?
Yes, especially because it was going to be a sketch. They were only going to be three characters, and I wanted to write something that I was going to act in, and I thought, great, this is it. And then with the rewrite, I still kept with that, even starting to look for other actors. I was like, I actually still want to be that guy. He's quite ridiculous, and it sounds like a lot of fun. He's so based on like real men I've had encounters with, and it's just, I was like, this is too delicious to not do.
It was. And then the other men in the room too, I think their interaction with you adds a dimension.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so nice. It's always nice when a film is fun to watch and then you get to find out it was fun to make. It's always funny when someone says, oh, that was the worst experience of my life making that film, but it came out well. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, how does that work?
No, that's wild. Thankfully, no, that was not the experience.
And then in post, was it equally fun to edit?
First was stressful, but editing was so much fun. That definitely, I always have so much fun in the edits, which it's just another element. I also get to relive the day, the shoot day, see all the bloopers, and It was really fun. It was definitely tough because I pretty much only edit when it comes to my own stuff. I don't practice enough between projects. So there's a lot of self-teaching when I start editing, and then I'm like, okay, what is this? What's the shortcuts again? And so there's a lot of that happening in the beginning, but I was very prepared with knowing, okay, what I was going to do. And so it was a lot of fun. And also my favorite part of that is choosing the music. And the theme song was made with this incredible producer, Michaela Fay. She's just phenomenal, and she just understood the assignment. So it was just all in all a really great experience.
And I'll ask, did you choose a female composer, or not? Like, did you want like a female on this?
Yeah. It's like a yes and a no, in a sense that I would, if it wasn't her, I have no idea what I would have done. But thankfully, things aligned in such a way that I'd actually chatted to her a month or so before, like 6 months before I'd even written, like WAP had even come out. I'd met her and I told her I want to do some musical comedy thing. So at some point I'll be contacting you. And that was really going to be just a sketch. So when I got in touch with her, it was just the perfect opportunity for that. But it also did feel great that she is a woman producer, and she makes incredible trap beats, and she just knocked it out the park. So it was all just really great. I feel like it was all just fate and stars aligning and all of that. But yeah, I definitely did add to it that, hey, a woman produced those incredible beats, and contact her. You know, she does really cool stuff. So yeah, all added to it.
Excellent. Excellent. Has the reception been wonderful? I'm crossing my fingers that in spite of a global pandemic, you did. Oh, did you shoot it during the pandemic?
Yeah, it was March 2021. So it was still, yeah, it was getting out of it.
We were just barely so, like, right. Like that was when, people weren't vaccinated or anything.
Yes. Yeah, I wasn't vaccinated at the time. I don't think vaccines had even come here yet. So it was a strange time. There was some testing and a lot of, protocols and all of that stuff to be enforced on the set, which was a challenge. But thankfully, it wasn't super duper 2020 lockdown. that was great.
That was great. And then once it was complete, did you get some local, have you gotten a local screening? Have you gotten to sit in a theater full of people to watch this?
It thankfully was a really, it was well received. I was so grateful for it. It was first on Instagram and YouTube, and then I did end up starting to submit to festivals. And there was the Girls in Film Festival in South Africa, in Johannesburg. I didn't manage to get there, but it was really great to have filmmakers reach out to me who were there at the screening, and it felt so so great that one of them was a filmmaker I really respect. She's this incredible director, and I actually like almost fell to the ground in shock when I got a message from her. I was like, "What? She thinks I'm good? This is wild!" Had a total fangirl moment.
What could be more wonderful than someone you respect, and you weren't even there to know she was seeing your film, and then to get it?
Yeah.
God bless her for sending you a message, because
oh my gosh, it meant the world to me.
That's one of my soapboxes. Yeah. Hop up on my soapbox and I'm like, people should give each other positive feedback too. In this troll culture, everyone goes online and criticizes things that they don't like, and they don't take the time to say what they do like.
Yeah.
So it's so nice that she reached out to you, and
it really, really was. I was at a local screening. I managed to go to the London Short Film Festival. There were three festivals that I wanted to go to, but I just couldn't make them all. And also it was during the time of Omicron as well. So it was just such a schlep, but eventually managed to get there and I went to, it was programmed really nicely as well, because it was programmed on a comedy night as well. So it was this great part of the festival where they had a stand-up comedians as well, and in between the screenings kind of thing. So it was just a really great evening in general. And it was, seeing as it was January of this year, I had seen the film and I'd kind of gotten over it. So it was, it felt really nice to kind of be there as people were receiving it for the first time. And that was the first time I'd been in a room with people watching it, and it was quite surreal. So yeah, really grateful that it's managed to get out there. So yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. And I'm assuming that was quite inspiring to see people respond to it. Did it, it inspires you to do more and make more?
Yeah, it definitely did. It 100% did. I think even during the networking parts of the festival, when I was just telling people about it, it was a lot of like, oh, what are you here for? What's your film thing? You know, a lot of elevator pitch things. Even from that, the reactions there were just kind of like, oh, okay, people care about this thing that I have to say. And it felt, it was a very validating experience. And so all the other satirical ideas that I have, I think, okay, cool, I should do this actually, you know, because there is an openness to it. And it's like a fun way of sneaking all my activism into into something that people will laugh at.
I mean, this is a very, very basic thing for me to say, but I think that people learn more that way than what can I say? We have so many beautiful, wonderful documentaries as part of our festivals, and they rarely pull an audience. People, deep down, people don't want to learn, but you can secretly point things out to them through satire.
It's kind of like my... I feel like it's my little secret, you know,
Like a documentary that compared the lyrics from WAP to the lyrics from a bunch of other number one hits.
Yeah.
A documentary that studied it very seriously would interest a few intellectuals, and no one else would watch it. Whereas what you did.
Yeah.
How wonderful. I'm sure if you went to the opening night mixer of any festival that your film was in, and with people, everyone says, what's your film? And you just said, well, I made The Wapademic, which is a mockumentary about, and then all of a sudden everyone look at you and go, well, I'm going to that one.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. And it's great that was, for lack of a better word, in terms of like my calling being comedy or satire or something, I'm like, okay, amazing. It just kind of fits in with my whole vibe. I'm like a non-confrontational activist. And so in my head, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to stand up in a protest and shout things. You know, that's something that I admire that people can do, but it doesn't come naturally to me. It feels too real and too scary for me. But let me write this comedy thing and sneak this in, and then people don't know what hit them. And now suddenly they're thinking about all these social things that I care about. And so I feel like it's like inspired to kind of keep going with that, you know, and it feels like making a difference somehow.
I think so. And I certainly think, I'm with you, by the way. I admire the people on the who demonstrate and things, but there's a lot of it near where I live. There's a very major intersection near us, and every time we drive by, you know, people are protesting for women in Iran, which is important.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Unbelievably important. But I actually do say to my partner, as we drive by, I'm like, I wonder how many of those people are also like calling their senator and calling their congressman and telling them how important this is to them. Or do they just stand on the corner for like an hour on Sunday afternoon and feel like they've made it? Cause I don't think they're actually making a difference. It's nice.
Yeah, it's
nice, but I'm not sure it's as effective.
Yeah. I feel like there's so many layers and facets to it. I think in terms of social change, and there's a place for everyone. And I think it's just about finding what yours is, you know, and and not, I think what I struggled with was not feeling bad about my way, you know, just because it doesn't look as brave, I guess, and doesn't feel as brave then. Yeah. And I spent a lot of time feeling bad about that. Like, am I a bad person because I don't want to necessarily do that? Whereas my way of effecting social change just looks different to other people's. And yeah, mine can also be effective.
I'm glad you've come around on that, because I think for sure you shouldn't feel bad at the way you choose. And yeah, I mean, obviously social change won't come about. It comes slowly, but yeah, everyone has to hit everywhere. And
yeah,
for sure. I mean, I'm sure your film would wake up more men to their hypocrisy than being lectured to.
Yes. Yes, 100%. You know,
yeah. Not enough men. Obviously, a lot of men would watch it and not get it. Yeah.
Definitely. It was actually quite interesting. I took it down from Instagram at some point. It started being distributed on other platforms, and I'd rather kind of push people to that. But I took a screenshot of all the comments just before, you know, so I can have them. And there were a few. One guy I went to film school with put a very heartfelt comment. I think he actually in the private messaged me, like, I really like the message that you put there. And, you know, it's actually weird how a lot of times as men, this is how we talk, and we don't realize the hypocrisy of that. It was a very genuine, like, hey, I thought about what you said kind of message. And it felt really validating, and I appreciated that message from him. And yeah, like you said, there were some who just thought it was funny that I dressed as a man, and that's the entire value they got from it. And I was like, okay, all right then, that's fine. But those were, you know, people who are going to need 7 different messages in 7 different ways, and that's fine.
That's true. Yeah. The rule of 7. Yeah. People don't get a message till they've read it. The 7th time it clicks, which is, it makes the artist work too hard.
Yeah.
I almost want you to say no, but it's probably not a no. Were there ever comments where people are like, I agree with the men in this film. WAP needs to be, we need to prevent things like that. Were there actually people who agreed with the message, the satire, or, you know, got it that far off?
Oh, no, thankfully not. I think that maybe it would have happened if it had been on TikTok, but it never made it to TikTok. So I'm grateful for that.
For sure. The internet can be an ugly place.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty bad. But thankfully, it was mostly positive and, effective.
That's wonderful. And have you, have you started writing the next stuff?
I have, yeah. This year I've been just mainly writing. I haven't actually made anything. I did direct my first music video, though. I'm very excited for that. It's actually for the artist who produced the WAPademic theme song. So, it's great. We have a really great working relationship now. And, and that was a lot of fun to do. And I think directing music videos has always been something I wanted to do. So it was great to get the opportunity to do that. Other than that, I'm developing a comedy TV show, and and I'm writing, I have 2 other mockumentary ideas, and I really hope I can bring them to life at some point. But for now, they're kind of simmering, and I'm just kind of itching to get to them, but I just have other deadlines. So yeah.
Understandable. It's always a balancing act.
It really is. Yeah. But when I once again have the energy and the funds to kind of do the fun thing, they're there. They're kind of, they're there. They're there for me.
That's true. We're on Zoom and people just are hearing our voices, but I can share with the people listening that in the background behind Celine, I see the post-it notes on the wall that definitely look like story ideas being plotted out. So this is a serious filmmaker. This is a serious storyteller.
This is my writing room. Yeah, definitely.
No,
it's a limited series. That's drama. It's kind of interesting for me. It's an interesting turn of events, but the rest of it is comedy. So, yeah.
So there's a drama wall, a comedy wall.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And I'm so happy I got to do a music video. I'm a huge fan. I think music videos can be so cool and artistic. I think
it's
how cool that the person that you brought in to write music for Wapademic turned around and said, hey, will you direct a music video for me?
Honestly, incredible. And we have very compatible sense of humor and cares about social topics. So it's just perfect, like the perfect colleague, honestly. She's making a kind of quirky, it was a quirky music video about a mental health issue that she has. And it was just so funky and fun and poppy. And I just can't wait for it to come out. I'm just itching for it to be out already. And she just, she's an incredible performer as well. So it was just all flawless. Excited for that.
Wonderful. Well, sounds like lots of very cool things are happening for you. And I had no idea until this conversation that you spent some time in Los Angeles.
I did. Yeah. I did the 1 year acting film in Burbank, the film course, sorry. And then, they give you a 1 year work visa. So yeah, it was during that year that I did the web series and, the political comedy show. So
that's funny. Yeah. Is that the film school in Burbank?
Yes, New York Film Academy.
Yeah, New York Film Academy in Burbank, California. It's always funny. It's called.
Yes.
But yeah, we've actually had people work the festival from there. And,
Actually,
that film school does draw international people for sure. In fact, I've written visa letters for people who work the festival. Because they submit and they're like, I'm trying to get a visa.
Yeah.
And I have to prove that I have bringing something of artistic value or something. I have a form letter that I just adjust a little that says this person made a wonderful film and it was at our festival and they're very talented and they should be working here so that people who live here can get jobs on their work.
that's great.
I don't know why our education system is so screwed up, but I think it's well publicized that we're less welcoming than we used to be. So we try to
film. Wait, where do you work? What do you mean?
Oh no, I just mean during the Trump years we stopped screwed up our visa program.
Yeah.
And that's why people started asking for letters.
Yes, definitely. He actually got elected like right before his first year in office was the year that I moved there. And I remember feeling very nervous during the election season. I was like, I've never paid attention to an American election, but until right now. the film school was really valuable. I got I got a lot of value from it. And it was also my first time studying something that I knew I was actually going to use. So it was a new feeling.
That's true. I didn't pester you for what your responsible degree was in.
Oh, right. It was civil engineering.
That's the cool stuff. I mean, film is cooler. Film is cooler, but what's cooler than bridges and roads and things that we actually like use, right? And dams and
I know you're not being sarcastic. I feel like you're being genuine, but it just sounds
I'm not
like
being sarcastic.
It's just been used. That exact thing has been used to make fun of it. So it's just.
Oh, has it? Oh, geez. To me, that is what's so. And I admit I'm a little crazy. I always make these analogies and things, but I think the skill set that's involved in civil engineering can be applied to filmmaking for sure. Because that's why you're an over planner, right? Because you understand if you design something well enough, it will hold up.
Thank you. I do think that there's definitely merit to what you're saying, because I think that somehow I feel like what I studied makes me a good producer. I have no idea how and why. I thought it was just because it taught me to use Excel. And I do think that calculating times and all of that on Excel definitely helps for first ADs. but thank you. I appreciate that. I will keep that with me so I remind myself that it was not a complete waste of time.
It was not. It was not. You are engineering, you know, engineering and architecture. That's, yeah, that's, those are the skills that go into filmmaking. People, it's because filmmaking, oh, stand-up comedy, actually, yeah, actually, all performance.
Yeah.
The more thought out and the more planned out, the better, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
People love these Bo Burnham specials, and I mean, my God, talk about structure and architecture.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Planning. Wow. Oh, yeah. Bo Burnham made me sad. Just like watching it was just like infuriating as a creative, because I'm like, damn it, nothing I do will be as good as this.
Oh, don't think that way. He's very, yeah, it's a one of a kind thing, that Inside show. That I assume,
yeah,
I thought Inside, I'm like, wow, this is the most brilliant thing ever. And then I went and watched his earlier specials. I'm like, okay, yeah, so he's an okay performer. It's just like Inside happened to be like, it was the perfect situation for someone with his,
yeah, that's true.
Ability, I think.
Very, very true. Yeah. You're right.
I mean, he seems lovely, and I feel, I certainly want him to feel better.
Yeah.
But, you know, not that he cares what I think, but I, yeah, that was the perfect situation for someone trapped at home for 2 years, was to.
No, that's very, very true. Yeah.
Spend a million hours with their own camera setups.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything you want to add before we wrap up? Do you want to mention? I know you talked about the web series that you're not. But is there a website or social media that people should follow to follow you?
I would prefer if people didn't check out the web series.
Yeah, don't even go near YouTube.
but no, I post things on my social media, on Instagram at Celine Chica, one word. And then my website, CelineChica.com, has all my previous work. So including the Wapademic. And I do want to say thank you. It's been really fun chatting with you. You mentioned how, you know, you feel like you know people from watching their stuff. I feel like from our emails, I feel like I've known you just, your personality comes through over email so well. So thank you for that.
thank you. Really, I appreciate that. I've never heard that before, but I try to also, when I started this podcast, it was because, you know, I felt like the filmmakers at the festival deserved a longer time to speak, because at the theater, you know, we have long Q&As, they're about 15 minutes, but
yeah,
15 minutes isn't long enough to discuss a film. And discuss a career and a life. And you know, especially because at the theater, we got to take questions from that damn audience too, and let them. Yeah. And then if their questions aren't good, I'm like, oh, this person's time is being wasted by a bad question. So yeah, I might do a little performing on by email just to make sure people know this will be a fun, happy experience.
And definitely came through.
And not not an annoying, oh God, what are you going to ask me thing?
Yeah. No, it came through really well.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I will put your website and social media links. They'll be in the show notes for this, as people talk about show notes. And I think, okay, I didn't double check, but I'm pretty sure we are recording this at the beginning of December, actually. But I think this podcast will come out probably the third week of January, and the TV season, Discover Indie Film Season 7, I believe we're aiming for January 15th. So it's kind of perfect timing. So anyone really listening to this,
great,
you heard us talk about the Wapademic. You certainly want to see it now. So go to Amazon Prime Video on a nice big TV. I encourage you not to watch films on your phone, but I know some people do. I might have seen a 15-year-old in my house sit watching Netflix on her phone in a room with a 65-inch TV in front of her, and she's looking at her phone. I'm like, why don't you turn on the TV for Netflix? She's like, I like it on my phone. I'm like, ugh.
Oh, no.
Oh, don't you understand what I do for a living? But anyway, people, please go to a big TV, open your Amazon Prime Video app, and just type in Discover Indie Film. It'll auto-complete at some point. And if you go to Season 7, Episode 1, The Wapademic is in there with two other wonderful films. There's, I think, 25, 26 wonderful films in season 7.
Great.
It used to be included with Prime. Then Prime did their thing. Amazon decided, you know what? We don't like giving you money for nothing. We'd rather charge the public. So it's $7.99 for the season in U.S. And I got to say, you know, $8 to support 25 or so indie filmmakers who make films from their hearts because they want to. These aren't films. You know, someone didn't sit around a table and say, how can we leverage our IP to make the most profit? You know, you didn't say to yourself, you know what? If I make this short film mockumentary and make a nice point about what's going on in popular culture, I'll definitely be able to, you know, you knew you weren't going to be able to buy a new car because you made a short film.
Yeah.
Especially this indie film world, I have nothing but respect for the people who do it, and the art is its own reward. So that's my pitch for people to watch Discover Indie Film, the TV series, and particularly Celine's film. And now I will finish up this darn podcast by saying, okay, so if you want to learn more about the podcast or the TV series it gave birth to, you go to discoverindiefilm.com. On social media, it's at DIFWINS. And I mentioned that Wapademic played at Sherman Oaks Film Festival. We hold that every November. And you can learn more at ShermanOaksFF.com. And it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And every June, there is a sister festival called Film Invasion Los Angeles. And you can learn about that at FilmInvasionLA.com. And it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And I think I've said all I'm supposed to. Oh, I didn't say like and subscribe. Please like and subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to be a really nice person, please get the series. And then I think most TVs, you can't write a review on the TV. So then you got to go to Amazon and just take 1 minute to not be a troll and go to Discover Indie Film on the Amazon website and give it 5 stars and write a nice review and mention how funny and smart you thought the Wapademic is, because that's the only way. It's so nice. It's so nice to get positive reviews. So be kind and, you know, don't write negative things about the people you don't like. Write nice things about the people you do. All right, I'll stop. Celine, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stop recording, and then we're going to start recording, and Celine will be answering the 4 questions for Discover Indie Film, which are 3 favorite films, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. I'm eager to hear her answers because she has such a great sensibility as a writer and performer and director and producer and editor and everything else. Just as a filmmaker. I could use the word filmmaker instead of do a 7 hyphenates. Thank you again, Celine.
Thank you again, Joe.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.